Please be seated.
Faith is sometimes a default answer for us. And it's a good default answer. A lot of times we come across things in our lives and we have questions about them, and we default to faith. We might be reading through our New Testament and come across some passages that we don't quite understand. We see where Jesus says things about unless you hate your mother or your family, your father, then you can't love me. And we look at a passage like that and we think, you know what? I believe the Bible. I believe it's real. I believe it's right. I don't understand this passage, but what I'm going to do is I'm going to trust, I'm going to have faith enough that that means something good, and we move on. Faith is a default answer for us when it comes to things that we look at in the Old Testament. There's passages where things happen and we think, that just doesn't make any sense. I don't understand that. How in the world could God command Joshua to walk in with his army and completely wipe out an entire city? Women, children, innocent blood, all these things, all these people, everything, wipe everything out. How is that possibly an okay thing? I don't quite understand that. I don't know exactly what's going on, but I'm going to default to faith and say, I believe in God. I may not know the answer, so I'm going to have to just believe that it's right. And there are things that are more practical in our lives. When we have decisions, we have things that are going on. We might not understand why we can't do certain things. We may not understand why other people are doing things that we're told we shouldn't do, and they're okay. And everything seems to be fine. As a matter of fact, people like them for it, and it seems to be working. They don't seem to be getting any trouble. Nothing bad seems to be happening. They seem to be doing good. And we say, well, you know what? I'm a good person with a good heart. I believe in God. And I'm just going to have faith that doing what God says is right and not doing what he doesn't want me to do, that's obviously something that I have just confidence in God. Another default answer for us, I think, especially with our young people, is the word example. We have a tendency to tell our young people quite a bit, you need to be an example. If we have a multiple siblings, we want to tell our older sibling, older child, you need to be an example for the younger ones. When I was a youth minister, if I stood up in class and I asked a question that was tough, I was going to get one of several answers. I was going to get God. You know, you can always say God's an answer to a question. Or because God said it was that way. Or because God wanted it that way. Another default answer would be, well, the Bible's right, and so that must be the way it is. And that goes back to our faith thing. But one of the other answers that seemed to come up so much when I would ask questions to young people was, well, we need to be an example. We taught our young people they need to be an example. Well, you've heard that over and over and over again, and we hear lessons about being an example. Well, I want to tell you something tonight, okay? Stop trying to be an example. Did you hear me say that? I want to say it again. Stop trying to be an example. Sometimes we wonder, the word burnout has shown up a lot more in the last decade than I ever remember hearing it. We've got preachers, a lot of you know this, who were preaching for a while, and Brother Roy, they get burnt out and they quit. And we've got all kinds of people who do different things. They work so hard and they get burnt out. Burnout seems to be one of those things that happens quite a bit. And with Christians, burnout, they get burnt out. I don't know how, I don't know why, I don't know what culturally is going on that's making people burn out so much. Maybe it is because they just view things differently than we did in the past, and that walking away from something because I'm tired of it might just all of a sudden be an option. Well, again, we talk about our young people, we talk to you. Listen, we want you to be faithful. And because we want you to be faithful, I'm telling you tonight, stop trying to be an example. Let me tell you what the dangers of trying to be an example are. If you're the kind of person who feels like everybody's looking at you, then you're doing Christianity, you're living Christianity for the wrong reason. If you feel like the only reason that you should do something right is because somebody else is watching you, then you've completely misunderstood what Christianity is about. Stop trying to be an example. We don't need you to try to be an example. The problem with being an example is if you're taught your whole life that you're an example and you grow up in a town like Henderson where everybody knows you and everybody knows your parents and everybody knows your grandparents, everybody knows where you go to church, and you're an example. And that's you're supposed to set a good example. Then you feel like when I'm out around people, I've got to act a certain way. But when nobody's around, I might can turn that switch off for a little while. Because the only reason I'm really trying to be a Christian at this point is because I was told I was supposed to be an example. And so now you move from Henderson. Somehow something goes wrong and you don't go to Freed Hardeman. And you go somewhere else. And all of a sudden you're in a scenario where you don't know anybody. Nobody knows you. Nobody knows your parents. Nobody knows where you came from. Nobody knows your background. Nobody knows your faith. Nobody knows anything. And all of a sudden, you find yourself in a situation where you don't have to be an example anymore. You want to get tired and burn out of Christianity? We don't want that. But if you do, then view yourself as the example. View yourself as the example, because what you're going to do is you're going to begin to live Christianity for other people. You're going to begin to do what's right because other people are looking. And you'll try to find opportunities not to do or to do those things, or you'll find opportunities to sneak around and do things that you shouldn't do because you want to, because nobody's watching and you're not an example. I think one of the reasons that we have a little bit of burnout with Christians sometimes is because they feel like everybody's looking at them and they got to do the right thing because everybody's looking at them. You go, okay, people are going to say, well, what about Matthew chapter 5? Doesn't Matthew chapter 5 tell us that we are the salt of the earth? That we are the city that's set on a hill? We are the light? That's exactly right. I want you to listen to the wording. We are those things. It doesn't say try to be those things. He doesn't say to those folks on top of that mountain, I want you to try to be the light of the world because everybody's looking at you. I want you to try to be a light in a room because everybody's looking at you. That's not what he said. He said, you are those things. Listen to me. Being an example is a byproduct of being a Christian, not the reason I'm a Christian. Being an example is something that we are because of who we are, not what we're trying to do. We don't need to be motivated in Christianity by the fact that other people are looking at us. We need to be motivated in Christianity by the fact that God is looking at us. And so instead of example, I want you to stop trying to be the example. I want you to pick that up. I want you to scoot it over here. And I want you to replace being an example with another default answer. Faith is always going to be a good default answer. I'm great with that. I don't understand this, but I believe it. And I'm going to do it because I believe in God, because I trust Him and I have confidence. But I want you to take example out of your default answers. I want you to sit over here and I want you to replace it with glorify God. I want you to replace it with glorifying God. Now, glorify is an interesting word because it means to raise the opinion of. It means to raise the opinion of something. If I'm a salesperson, I'm glorifying what I have, what I'm trying to sell. I'm going to tell you all the great things about it. I'm going to tell you all the things that it can do. I'm going to tell you all the bells and the whistles that this car has. I'm going to show you how everything on this thing can just do tremendous things. If I'm trying to sell you something, I'm going to do everything I can to raise the opinion of it in your mind. That's what glorify means. And I want you to take example, put it over here, and put glorify God in there. And instead of trying to be an example for everybody because they're looking at you, I want you to try to glorify God. I want you to think about the fact that you should show other people who God is. Because glorifying God is more important than trying to be an example, and it will certainly bring about equal, if not better, results. If I'm trying to live my life in such a way that I glorify God, then I am the example. There's no trying. There's no worrying about, well, nobody's looking at me, so I'm just going to turn that off for a little while. I'm not the example today. Y'all need to look somewhere else. There's no getting away from the people who know you and getting in a setting where folks don't know you and saying, you know what, I'm going to try doing some other stuff for a while because these people don't know who I am. Glorify God. Raise the opinion of God in other people's minds. That should be our default answer when it comes to our behavior, when how we live our lives, the choices we make. How can I glorify God with this? What can I do to help other people see God in me? If that can be a default answer in us, we will have a very, very successful future. I want you to turn to Joshua chapter 7. The book of Joshua is a great book about a great man. Moses has handed over the reins of the leadership of the children of Israel, not being able to go into the promised land. Joshua apparently was a very prepared man. Over and over in the book it says he got up early in the morning. I'm not a morning person. Joshua was a morning person. He got up in the mornings. And he loved God. He prayed to God. And God wanted him to lead his people and take that land. And so they crossed over the Jordan River. And they go right in the center of the land that they're supposed to take. And they camp out in Gilgal. And they go down south. They march around those walls of Jericho. And they make all those walls fall down. And what they were told was, as I mentioned earlier, when you go in, you wipe it all out. Wipe every bit of it out. Don't leave anything there. Don't take anything from it. You wipe the place out. Kill everything that's living. Don't take anything out of there. And so they did that, they thought. They go back to camp in Gilgal. And they send some spies into a much smaller town west in Ai. You'll have to ask Dr. Woods how you pronounce that. In Ai. And they sent the scouts over. And the scouts come back and said, we don't need many people for this. Probably only 2,000 or 3,000. Don't trouble everybody. Send a couple folks over there. We'll wipe them out, clean up with them, come back. So he got up early the next morning. They took a group over there, and they lost. They had just wiped out this huge city of Jericho, and now they've gone to this smaller city of Ai, and they got beat. So many of them got killed, and they had to turn around and flee away from this. And Joshua was so. He was beating himself up. He was so confused about this. He was so upset about this. It bothered him so bad, he blamed himself. He thought he had made a mistake. There was something that wasn't right. There was something that had gone wrong here. There was a problem. We had wiped out Jericho. God was going to give us all this land. We just had a defeat over here at this little small town. What happened? What happened? And God says, somebody's made a mistake. Somebody brought something out of Jericho, and I told you not to. And so the next morning, Joshua calls all the children of Israel and divides them up into tribes, whittles them down to their households and their families, gets them all the way down to man, and finds this one gentleman named Achan. And Achan had had a problem when he went through. He saw something. He said he coveted it. He saw something. He wanted to have it. It was some clothes and some silver. And there's just a couple little things. It wasn't even that much. It wasn't a big deal. It wasn't a big deal at all. It was just a couple small things. And so he grabbed those things and he hid them in his stuff and hid some of it under his tent. The rest of that story goes on. They took him and all that he had out into the outside of their camp there, and they stoned him to death and burned everything that he had. Listen, there's a reason I tell you that story. One of the things I want you to know about this is this. Sometimes our successes can make us overconfident. Sometimes when things are going well, we get to feeling like we can handle more. 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 12 says, "Let him who thinks he stand take heed lest he fall." The idea of that is sometimes we as good people, we with good hearts, I think we beat up on our young people too much. I think it seemed like every youth event I ever went to was talking about how bad they were, how much they need to change, how much they need to fix. And I'm sitting there going, I'm working with good kids. I don't know who y'all are working with. We got a lot of good people here. You folks are good people. We love you. We respect you. We appreciate you. We know that you're good folks, and we know you're going to make mistakes, but we know you're good. And those of us who are good people with good hearts, sometimes we do well. We make great decisions. We turn around and we say no to things we shouldn't say no to. And we do it over and over. We may even become known for the person who doesn't do that. I remember when I was in high school. I actually go back a little bit. When I was in fifth grade, some of my friends started cussing. And I went home and I asked my mom, "Mom, can I cuss?" She said, "No, you can't cuss." I said, "Well, why not?" She said, "That's not right to do." So I didn't cuss. I didn't cuss in the fifth grade. I didn't cuss in sixth, seventh, or eighth grade. I didn't cuss in the ninth grade. Didn't cuss in the 10th grade. But when I got to the 11th grade, things changed. I got mad at a football practice one afternoon. And I had never cussed, and I turned around and I said something. And you know what? Felt a little good to say that, if I'm being honest with you. I never said that before. It kind of made me feel a little stronger for a second. And so something else happened, and I said something else. Well, I wasn't going to go too far, so that's all I said that day. And I went home. The next day, I'm standing in the lunch line. And I said a cuss word. And two guys standing in front of me turned around and looked at me and said, "You don't cuss." And I went, "You're right." And I hadn't said one since then. It's 2 days. I asked for forgiveness, and I've certainly repented of that. Sometimes good people with good hearts, they do the right things. They might even become known for that. And they might begin to feel confident in that. And the problem with that is sometimes when we get so successful, we can accidentally become a little too overconfident. And that's when we mess up. That's when we overlook something. That's when we forget something that we knew. And so as we're talking about this idea of a game plan, and so we're going to win some stuff. We're going to do good. Things are going to work out for us. Things are going to go well for us. We're going to see some benefit from the hard work and the things we've done and the way we've lived our lives. But we need to make sure that we don't get so overconfident in that that we begin to make mistakes in other areas. Is it possible to get in trouble retroactively for something you did when you were a student at Freed Hardeman? I need to ask that question before I tell the story. Anybody? Just throw out a yes, and I won't tell it. All right, okay, I didn't get anything. I remember when we were in college, we had been asked, several of us, to come up and speak at a youth rally in Banner Elk, North Carolina. And the admissions department let us take two of the Freed Hardeman vans with us. Several of us loaded up, and we went over there. And while we were over there, we were able to go over a little early, and we did some skiing in Banner Elk, North Carolina. I never skied before, and I had a lot of fun. Well, we were skiing and spending some time doing that, and that afternoon after we got done, we were talking about how much fun that was, but how much more fun it would be if we could sled down that mountain. I mean, like, it was like a mountain. And I was going, skiing was fun, but what if we sledded down it? And we were like, well, yeah, I mean, and we talked about it. We talked about how if we, you know, we'd want to tie our sleds to our arms so that if we fell off, our sleds wouldn't go flying down the mountain without us. We talked about the fact we would need goggles because the snow, we had it all planned out. Well, we kind of let that go, and later that night we were sitting around, and somebody said, hey, let's go sled down that mountain. I won't say that it wasn't me, but I won't say that it was either. And so we got these sleds, and they were about this long, about this wide, and they were deep. They were kind of like a luge, you know. You got down in the thing. We tied them to our arms. We put our bibs on, and we went, and we decided we needed to get a van at the bottom and a van at the top so that when we got down, we'd have a, you know, it was a long way. It was like a 10-mile drive, 10-minute drive up the mountain. So we took one of the vans with a certain logo on it. We parked it at the bottom, and we took another one of those vans. Took it to the top where there was a condominium. We parked it up there. We went across into the Black Diamond, the very tip top of the mountain. There was four or five of us, and we had all geared up. We're ready to go, and we decided that we needed to say a prayer. I mean, what we were doing was illegal, but we felt like we needed to say a prayer anyway. And we sang "We Shall Assemble on the Mountain" because we just felt like it was appropriate. Made us feel better about it. We were representing. Well, you could see about 50 feet down through there, and then it just dropped off into blackness because it was the middle of the night. It's about 1:30 in the morning. And during the day, it had gotten hot, and the ice had melted a little bit, and then it got cold, and that had frozen. They had put fresh snow. You could barely even stand up on it. I mean, it was some prime sledding stuff. And so we let go, and we started taking off down through there, and we got right past the certain point where the light was shining from some of the lights they had on, and it tilted down, and we went flying down that hill. And when you got to the first section, there was an area that we had to stop right there. We all stopped. We stood up, gave each other high fives, scooted over a little bit, and here we go back down through there. And we go flying down through this thing. We go across a mogul field on a sled. I mean, that's crazy. You're hitting these ramps and flying all over the place. We get down to the bottom, and we're like, we need to do that again. I mean, that was fun. So we had to go in, get the van, and drive them back up. We had one guy who took the sacrifice and drove the van back down and didn't come down, and we got back over there. Well, we had just done this, and it was a blast, and we had a lot of fun. And so we decided we were going to do it again. We didn't get in trouble. There was no danger. Nobody got hurt. And so we got up on the top, and listen, praying worked. So we said our prayer again. We sang "We Shall Assemble" again because we just felt good about that. And this time I let go, and I am flying down this mountain. And I told you a minute ago there was an area where you had to stop, kind of stand up and scoot over a little bit. That was because there was this huge sign that said, "Beware of hole." Big sign. "Beware of hole." And it was on this big old post, and there were some trees hanging down just right behind it. Well, that was the part we were kind of going into. We had to slow down and scoot over a little bit. Well, I'm flying down this mountain, looking between my feet, and I'm just loud, and I'm having a blast. It's fun, you know? And I'm heading down through there, and I'm seeing that sign getting closer and closer. But I thought, you know what? I'm going to hang on just a little bit longer. I didn't have any problem slowing down a minute ago. And so I held on, and I held on until I thought it was the last minute. Now, in order to stop this sled, you had to just roll off of it, dig your feet, your knees, your elbows, your fingers, and your nose into the ground and try to slow yourself down as you're going down this hill with your sled just kind of dragging behind you like this. And so I bail off, and I go, you know, stick my feet in, my knees, everything I got to stick into it. But the problem is I'm not slowing down. I hung on just a little too long this time. And I look over my shoulder, and I see that big sign that says, "Beware of hole." And I'm approaching it pretty quick, and I reach out, and I grab that pole, and it just goes boom right out of my hand. I reached out and grabbed a tree limb, and it just slid right through my hands. And a buddy of mine was standing there, and he dove for me and grabbed my arm, and my hand just slid right out of his. Now, in my mind, if there's a hole in the middle of snow, it's because there's water there. I mean, I don't know much about snow. I don't know much about holes in snow. But there's a big sign that says there's one there. And so my thinking is that it's probably deep water or something. I literally thought that I was dying that time. I mean, I thought it was all over. So I'm going in feet first, and I turn around, and I go, because I thought, well, maybe I can get, you know, to the bottom of the mountain under the ice. And I go down into that hole, and I just lay in at the bottom. And my sled just goes flying against all the walls, and I'm just standing there, and I'm looking. There's a little bitty tiny stream of water going right down between my feet. I didn't cause it. It was just right there. Right there. And that was what caused this big old hole. Now, Chad Thompson could have got out of that hole no problem. But it would take me and Gary both to get out of there. I was down in there, and the guy had to form a chain and reach down and grab me, pull me up out of there. Now, listen, the reason I tell you that story is now I feel much better. I think that's called repentance, isn't it, when you tell a story about something you've done wrong? But the reason I tell you that story is, listen, there are times in our lives where we will do something that's right. And we'll do something again that's right. And we'll have paid close attention to what we were doing to make sure that we didn't do it wrong. We didn't say things we shouldn't have said. We didn't make fun of something we shouldn't have made fun of. We didn't go places we shouldn't have gone. We didn't do things we shouldn't have done. We made good decisions. And sometimes, just like the negative, when we make bad decisions, they become easier. Sometimes the right decisions become easier too, and we begin to let up on what made us make the right decision in the first place, and we begin to feel so good about ourselves and who we are, and we begin to feel like we can take on anything because we've handled this before. We find ourselves in a situation where we mess up. And so no matter what the game plan is, one, I think we need to default to faith. Two, we need to default to glorifying God. But we need to keep in mind that sometimes our successes can make us just a little bit overconfident. Sometimes the things that we do right can make it to where the next time, even though it may be easier, it seems easier, it's actually more difficult. The next thing I want you to know is, and we're looking at this at Joshua chapter 7, is failures have lessons too. Failures have lessons too. What do you think the lesson is here for Joshua in this passage? What do you think the children of Israel thought about God and thought about their relationships with God and thought about God's Word? What do you think all these people learned from this failure? You've got an army of people marching in this small city. God's already said that you're going to be okay as long as you do it this way. You get a defeat, you turn around and come back home. Everybody's wondering what happened. Joshua's upset about things. And then they find out it was one thing. There was one thing that caused all this to happen. This failure was caused by one problem, one mistake. And it wasn't even one that I made. It wasn't even one that Joshua made. It wasn't one that anybody else there made. It was one that somebody else made that didn't even know about. What do you think this loss taught these folks? God means what He says. If God says to do something, you better do it. If God has an expectation of me, then I ought to try as hard as I can to live up to that expectation. If I know what's right and choose not to do it, there will be punishment that goes along with that. There's all kinds of lessons that can be learned from our failures. I remember when I was in high school, I umpired baseball. And it was the 10 and 11-year-olds. And there was this boy who his dad coached. He was kind of a stockier fella. His son was short and kind of stocky. Real athletic, real humble, real nice, real friendly. But there was this other boy who ran his mouth all the time. As an umpire, I would stand back there, and this boy would run his mouth talking about, he would play catcher, and people would get up to the plate, and he would just talk bad, just bad mouth. It was just awful. He would just sit there and talk and talk and talk. Well, there was one day that this little guy who, like I said, was pretty stocky, but a small guy standing there on third base. And when the pitch came in, that guy came running off third base, took his big secondary lead and would look and turn around and come back. Well, this catcher didn't like that. He didn't like that little guy was running off down the end here. And so he stands up on one of the pitches. And he looks down the third base line and he said, "I own home plate." He yelled, "I own home plate." Well, I'm standing there going, "Whoo, somebody's mama needs to come over here." The next pitch comes in. He gets a secondary lead. He stands up and he goes, I said I own home plate. Well, everybody on the whole field was hoping that something good would happen here. And I was standing there as an umpire as I watched the third base coach lean over and say something to his son. I didn't know exactly what he said, but I was pretty sure I knew what he said. The next pitch came in, and that guy off third base took off as fast as he could towards home. And that catcher stood up. He was a good catcher. And he grabbed that ball, and he turned around. That little guy put his shoulder right in his chest and knocked him into the backstop. And the ball went flying. And we called him safe. You know, sometimes those failures like that can help us. Because I'm going to tell you something. I know some words that never came out of, I'll just say his first name, Sean's mouth ever again. And those were, I own home plate. Because that day, home plate got taken away from him. You know, sometimes failures help us. Romans chapter 6 says, what shall we say then? Shall we continue in sin that grace may abound? The idea of sin here is I have failed. The idea of sin is I've missed the mark. It's an archery term. There's a target there, and I have a bow, and I pull it back, and I'm trying to hit the mark. If I've missed the mark, I've sinned. That's the idea that we're looking at here. And so if I've sinned, then I have failed. I have made a mistake. I have fallen from doing what it is that God wants me to do. There's something not right in my life. And he said, well, if God loves us and is gracious to us, then should we not just continue to do those things and hope that God would forgive and forgive and forgive? And he goes, certainly not. How can those of us who died to sin live any longer in it? The idea is if I have sinned, it should not provide an opportunity for me to want to sin again. If I sin, it should hurt me so bad that I never, ever want to go back down that path ever again. And whatever it was that led me down that path, I'll try as hard as I can not to get entangled in that ever again. Sometimes our failures have lessons. Real quickly, I want to leave you with a couple last thoughts. I want you to know that God will bless you later for decisions you make now. Here's a situation that we read about where God punished them right then for things they did wrong. And there's a lot of those in the Old Testament. There's the Ark of the Covenant falling off the wagon, and the gentleman reaching up and grabbing it. God said, that's not even how you're supposed to be carrying the thing. He was very specific on what they were supposed to do. But in this passage, we see where God's judgment is real. But at the exact same time, what we need to understand is God will bless us later for decisions we make now. You look at Joseph and you see all the decisions that he made that were good, and God ended up blessing for him. You can look all along the line at people who consistently did what God wanted to do, and he blessed them. What you need to know when it comes to your game plan, when it comes to living your life and doing what you know's right and staying away from being wrong, that if you can tough it out, make it through it, live your life right, God will bless you for it. I may not see it right now like these folks did, but God will bless you later for decisions that you make now. And so there's confidence in that. There's confidence in knowing that if I can stand up and live my life right and do the things I know are right, that God's going to bless me. The last thing I want to make mention of is this, and it's really a question. Joshua and his people suffered a defeat. Joshua was hurt. And it was all because one man did one thing that he shouldn't have done. I think one of the things that we know for sure, as I've mentioned, is that we have good people. We have good young people. We have folks with good hearts who have good minds. You want to do the right thing. We appreciate you, we respect you, we love you. And I can't say those things enough because I think we beat up on you. But when good people try to live their lives right, sometimes there's just one thing that's causing them problems. Sometimes it's just one thing that's caused them problems. It may not be a big list of things like other people have. It may not be all these things that other people are dealing with. Sometimes good people are dealing with one thing that's a problem for them. Maybe it's something on the internet. Maybe it's something to do with cutting or pride or whatever the case is. Sometimes when good people are trying to live their lives right, there's one thing, just like in the situation with the children of Israel, it's stopping them from being everything God wants them to be. James says we can be perfect in all the law and stumble in one and be guilty of it all. That's a very scary thing to think about. But what it ought to be is a motivation to say, you know what, I'm going to do everything I can to be the best that I can be, absolute best I can be, no matter what. The default is, I have faith in God, and I'm going to try to glorify Him. And if there's something that's stopping you from doing that, then we want to help you with it. It may be something you need to deal with on your own. It may be something you need to go home and work on. It may be something you need help with or talk to somebody about. We'd love to pray with you. If we can help you in any way, if you'd like to be baptized for forgiveness of your sins, or if you've fallen away after you've been baptized, there's something that's a problem with you, there's something going on, we'd love to help you. What's your one thing? Please let us help you with it as we stand and sing.